Go back into South Penn's history. 20 years, 50 years, 100 years, and what do you see? You see people working to bring change to this city. They had different ideas of what that should be. They didn't always agree. Yet, in every decade, there were those for whom positive change was their life's work. This podcast, South Bend's Own Words, features the voices of people who made the city change. We'll share clips from oral histories done by the Indiana University South Bend Civil Rights Heritage Center that tell a more complete history. It's the story of many cultures, not just one. It's the story of South Bend. The streets were one of 20th century South Bend's most prominent elder families. The matriarch, Odie Mae Johnson, spent the first years of her life in a predominantly African-American, still racially mixed, yet highly segregated resort town in western Kentucky. Her partner, Bernard Street Sr., was an early graduate of Indiana University's School of Dentistry. He ran a clinic out of his home on the west side, about a block from what is today the Civil Rights Heritage Center. Both Odie Mae and Bernard were deeply embedded in their African-American identities and culture. Yet their skin tone was light enough that other people saw them as passing for white. This tension between their internal racial identity and their external presentation impacted everyone in the Streets family. Odie Mae lived this tension as she moved from western Kentucky to Chicago and then to South Bend, Indiana, when she was in the sixth grade. In 1996, Odie Mae sat down with her niece to record her own life's story for posterity. She talked about going to Central High School and being denied entry on the swimming team because of her race, starting a family and proudly raising four children, as well as the unique experiences of a prominent, light-skinned African-American family living in the west side of South Bend.
I am Odie Mae Johnson Streets, and I'm recording this from my home. My maternal grandparents and paternal grandmother lived in Dawson Springs, Kentucky. This Dawson was a summer resort town, and both sets of grandparents had lodgings where they kept guests who came to Dawson Springs for the mineral waters and baths, and for vacations. This was also a town where many whites came for the same reasons. My father and my mother moved to Chicago, Illinois, from Kentucky because they felt the larger city offered more opportunities for work. My father got a job in the postal system where I was born, November 1st, 1913. After my father died, my mother took my sister Josephine and me back to Dawson Springs, Kentucky, where we lived with our grandparents. And she went back to Chicago and got employment at Sears Roebuck Company. In order to get this job, she, being a fair complexion, was able to, what they call, quote, pass as a white person in order to get this job. After working for a while, she didn't like this living arrangement because at work she would be white, and when she went to her lodgings with friends, she was in a different world. She didn't like this arrangement, so she returned to Dawson Springs, Kentucky, although there was segregation in the churches, in the schools, we were the black community, and I would use maybe black and Negro and colored, the different terms that was associated with black people, and that goes back to the one drop theory, but one drop makes you all black, and then certain terms were used. I never could understand, even as a child, why we had to go to a little small school, which was across the street from my grandfather's home, and the white children who went to a very nice school would have to come past our school to go there. Sometimes they would throw stones at the door of our school, and we were never let out until after the white children passed. Also, I couldn't understand segregation in the churches and why we couldn't go to the movie shows. They would have to sit upstairs to go to the movies, and downstairs, comfortable seats were for the white audiences. Well, being of fair complexion, many of the mothers was afraid for their sons, especially to be walking with me, because of the segregated patterns of the South. One time I was walking to church with a dark-skinned guest, and as we passed, some of the white men were standing outside of the place we were walking, said, "That's a mighty white girl to be walking with that nigger." Also, there was this young boy that always would call us niggers every time he'd see us in town or walking. So one day I told my sister, we were walking to town, and it had been raining, and I picked up some wet mud. I said, "I bet we meet this kid that's always calling us names." Sure enough, we did. And he was walking along, his father and another man, they were ahead of us. When he said that, I let him have the mud right in his face. But those things happen. Some of our white neighbors, one lady particularly used to come to my grandmother complaining about her lot in life. And my grandmother would tell her that she shouldn't complain because the world was hers. She had no discrimination against her, and that she could achieve whatever she wanted if she tried and wanted to, whereas other people may have aspirations but were thwarted because of discrimination. My mother moved to South Bend, Indiana, and she married a man by the name of Mr. Winston Overby. He worked in South Bend at the Studebaker factory, and many people came there for job opportunities. My mother wanted us to have a better school education, because in Dawson, the school system only provided up to the sixth grade. And I entered Linden School, and this was a big surprise to me and a joy, because from a one-room schoolhouse, we had this big building with home ec classes and gymnasium, and they would have outings. We would go out to play in the park for May Day, and oh, I was just really excited, and I liked it. And we also had various opportunities for mixing with people of different ethnic backgrounds. For instance, there was a large enrollment of children from Polish and Hungarian backgrounds, and we lived next door to a Polish family and right across the street from Polish families, and that was an intermixture. Later on, we get more of a black community, but whites began to move in other sections of South Bend, in that section of town. When I went to Linda School, it must have been, I was 10 years old, about 1924. And then I went to Central Junior High and then Central Senior High. Well, in Central Senior High, black children were not, girls were not allowed to take swimming classes. So one day I told my friend Cecilia, I said, we're going to sign up. I said, we have a right to take swimming classes just like everyone else. And she didn't want to go and be rejected, but I kept after her. She still wouldn't go. I said, well, I'm going to sign up and people have to tell me I can't take swimming lessons. Well, I knew there had been a so-called black colored girl who pulled past and she took swimming lessons. No one knew, but everyone knew that I was Afro-American background because I was active in a lot of sports and the gym teachers and all knew. I signed up. I said, you'll have to say no. Well, anyway, it passed on and I did take swimming lessons, but it was quite a few years before the general class was open to all children. In our graduation class, there were just four, my girlfriend Vivian Roberts and two other students and myself. That was the ratio of black graduates that year for South Bend High School, which later became Central High School. I took college preparatory courses, but at that time the counselors would try to persuade colored or Negro children to take just general courses. They'd almost say that you'll have no opportunity to be a teacher, go somewhere, so you best take a course of study that would be more likely to aid you in getting a job, mainly, I guess, as a maid or a janitor or whatever. There's nothing wrong with being a maid or a janitor if you want to be, but if you want to go to college and want to aspire to something else, you should have the opportunity. No one has the right to limit what a person might want to do based on segregation. In the meantime, I began keeping company with a young man who came to South Bend, Dr. Bernard Rainier Streets. I graduated from high school in January, but then we decided to get married in on April 7th, 1931. Then we moved in with my mother at 134 North Burchill Street. My son, Bernard William Streets Jr., was born in the same house, 1933. It was a very, very cold, snowy night. The snow was so deep that my husband had to walk to get the physician, Dr. Kessel Mott, who lived about two blocks down on Burchill Street from us. Bernard was a beautiful little baby boy who wouldn't keep his hands undercover even on the very cold night of his birth. We lived there together until finally we rented a house where my husband had his office and home together. This house, the neighbors were white. On either side, neither neighbor would speak to us because they didn't like the idea of a black family living next door. Except upstairs in one of the houses were two old ladies. One of the old white ladies called me and told me, "Don't worry about Bernard when he's playing. I'm upstairs. I have nothing to do. I'm watching out. You do your work, and Bernard will be all right because I will be watching out too." 1935, my second son, Donald Taylor Streets, was born in my mother's home. Dr. Mott, too, was the attending doctor. Nance and Marilyn Lucille Streets, our first daughter and third child, was born September 19, 1939. Nancy was a cute little 5-pound baby girl with thick black hair, and it was here that my husband, Bernard, entered the armed service of World War II. I took a course in blueprint tracing at the Southland Community School Corporation. This class was formed at the request of Bendix to replace male personnel in the engineering department, the draftsmen. I was one chosen to go because the person from the personnel office came and looked over our work and told us to get our instruments, and the only formality was to go through the hiring department at the personnel at Bendix Corporation. When I arrived, a person said, I'm sorry, but we've had enough people, so we won't need you. When the person came out, he looked all around as if looking for someone, and I was the only one standing there. I thought this was unusual because I was already hired informally. I was one in the very first class, so there weren't any others trained at this time for blueprint tracing. I knew it had to be a racial thing. Being a light-skinned person, I know this man was looking for an obviously dark-colored person. After that, I went to work for the rubber company in Mishawaka, Indiana. We worked on Army raincoats, and that was the department in which I worked. I worked there for 9 months, and then shortly thereafter, my husband was released from service. The fourth daughter and my last child was Sandra Vivian Streets. She was a post-World War II baby, born 1947. She was a little blue-eyed, blonde baby girl with short hair. I would like to tell you about my faith. In 1949, I became a member of the Baha'i Faith. The pivot around which the Baha'i Faith revolves is one God, unity of religion, the oneness of mankind, universal peace, independent investigation of truth, the essential harmony of science and religion, equality of men and women, elimination of prejudice of all kinds, universal compulsory education, a spiritual solution to the economic problems, a universal auxiliary language. My sons, Bernard Jr. and Donald Taylor Street, and the late J. Chester Allen Jr., attended fireside meetings to learn more about the faith, and all became Baha'is in 1949. Bernard received his B.S. degree from Indiana University at Bloomington. Further study was pursued at University of Michigan, Ann Arbor, and also received his master's degree in business administration from Notre Dame University. Bernard is now retired, but does work as a research consultant in microbiology. Donald, my second son, graduated with a major in education from the Indiana University at Bloomington. Donald taught both in South Bend and Mishawaka and became a principal of the Southside School in Mishawaka. He received his master's degree in school administration at the University of Notre Dame and received a PhD in education at the University of Massachusetts Amherst, where he was an assistant professor at the Center for the Study of Human Potential. At the present time of this recording, January 25th, 1996, he is principal of a school in Mesa, Arizona. Nancy, a graduate of Indiana University at Bloomington, received her degree in the degree in speech and theater won the crown of Miss Indiana University in 1959. Magnanimous as the title might have been, the university soon dropped it. She did not appear in the 1959 Arbutus as previous beauty queens had been presented. Sandra, a graduate of Pivot Point School of Cosmetology in Chicago, has worked as a waitress in audiovisual and film production in Los Angeles, California. More will be recorded later.
South Bend's Own Words was created by Kevin Tidmarsh and me, George Garner. This episode was produced by John Watson from the Ernestine M. Racklin School of the Arts at Indiana University, South Bend, and by me through the Civil Rights Heritage Center. Visit us and learn how IU South Bend students inspired the transformation of a once segregated South Bend swimming pool. We give guided tours and offer public events that show how the history of oppression echoes through this city today. See and hear more history, plan your visit, or share your thoughts about this episode, all at crhc.iusb.edu.